Nate Burleson, and welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this Thursday, August 6th, a possible medical breakthrough. Dr. Celine Gounder will tell us why the latest flu vaccine could be the most effective yet. Plus, in today's economy, more young people are moving back home. Now, it can be tricky, a tricky situation that is, so we've got some advice from the experts. And Amanda Klutz is here to talk about her new reality show. She plays the role of advisor to a notorious bachelor looking for a bride. And we've also got a beagle in studio. Not just any beagle. This dog is hypoallergenic thanks to gene editing, a controversial practice. We will explain. And actor and showrunner D'Ara Kilpatrick will be with us live to talk about D'Ara from Detroit, season 2. All that and more ahead.
We have big news in this morning's Health Watch. The FDA has approved the first flu vaccine that uses mRNA technology. That's the same as Pfizer and Moderna's COVID vaccines. Medical correspondent Dr. Celine Gounder is here to show us why that matters. She is also editor-at-large for public health at KFF Health News. Good morning, Dr.
Good morning. Celine.
Okay, let's jump right in. What makes this vaccine different? And then how is this going to allow scientists to better help fight the annual flu?
So most flu vaccine is still grown in chicken eggs. And this takes months to do. And the farther ahead you have to plan to grow it, the farther ahead you have to predict what strains are going to be in there, which means your risk of a mismatch in strains is going to be higher. And so with mRNA vaccines, you can produce them much more quickly, means you can also update the vaccine more efficiently. Just to give you some perspective, if we had a flu pandemic hit tomorrow, mm-hmm. if you use the egg-based technology, it would take 18 months to produce enough flu vaccine for that pandemic strain to cover a quarter of the world's population.
Wow.
With an mRNA vaccine, you could do it much more quickly.
So who is eligible for this vaccination, and when is it going to become available for people to get?
Yeah, so this is for people 50 to 64, it's approved. And then for people 65 and up, there's an accelerated approval. Mm-hmm. So some of the side effects people should be aware of, and it's common to other mRNA vaccines. You might have some injection site pain, fatigue, headache. There were two serious side effects that they saw in the trials, somebody with low blood pressure and somebody with myocarditis. We know that side effect with other COVID vaccines or mRNA vaccines.
Yeah.
But the vaccine effectiveness was higher than for the standard flu vaccines.
So you talked about the age range, but is it going to be available for young kids?
Not at this time.
No. No. Okay. Are you surprised by the FDA's decision? Because this approval came after, you know, the FDA initially refused to review
right.
the application. So why did they do this kind of course reversal?
Well, unfortunately, there's been unscientific skepticism of mRNA vaccines. Mm-hmm. And so Secretary Kennedy actually canceled some 22 mRNA projects funded by the federal government worth about $500 million on top of a Moderna pandemic flu contract. And earlier this year, they were refusing to even look at the application. It was after 10 last night that we finally heard that this had been approved. They
wow.
had to make a decision yesterday, one way or the other. And so that shows you they were really dragging their feet on this.
Got that. Well, flu season is coming up, so people have to make decisions. Thank you, Dr. Celine Gounder.
Have your adult kids moved back home? If so, you are not alone. And I mean that literally. A new report shows a record 25.2 million people ages 18 to 35 lived home last year. That's even higher than during the pandemic. So what's behind it, and how can parents and young adults live together in harmony? To help us figure it out, we are joined by CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger and Dr. Gail Salt, a psychiatrist at New York Presbyterian and Weill Cornell Medicine. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so Jill, I'll start with you. Why are we seeing this increase in young people moving back in with their parents?
Well, it is so expensive out there for these young adults. And, you know, obviously we've talked about home prices, but rents, everything else, utilities, groceries, and a lot of these kids are saddled with school loans. And so they are moving back home, not because they're bust outs, because it's really hard to manage this. You know, in this study, we found that 7 in 10 of these kids actually have jobs. They're not couch surfing. So this is so interesting to me. Like, I have a job. It's still expensive. I think this is a really smart financial decision not to be going into debt, not to kill yourself to do this, like save some money at home, chill out, get on your way.
You know, it's interesting when I was thinking about this because I thought is this really a bad thing? I don't think it is. I grew up in a multi-generational home. And for me, it was about community. It taught family. It taught village. You know, grandmother lived with us, aunt lived with us, all of that. And it probably was economic as well. So, you know, I wonder, Dr. Gale, is this something that actually could be a good thing? It just even emotionally for people and families.
What we're really all circling around is the task is that your kid launches, right? They psychologically, and they become a functional, independent, successful, productive member of society. That task can be done outside, moving into their own place. I think actually that's kind of ideal. But if it's not affordable, it can be done within the home, but only if you set the ground rules
right. But how do you gain independence if you're still living at home?
Okay, you have to treat it like an adult-adult relationship if you move back in, not like an adult-child relationship. That is the key task. So you're treating each other as adults. How do you do that? Start by setting the house ground rules. That's who's gonna do the chores, who's gonna tend to meals, what are the rules about pets, about guests, about substance use?
How are you gonna contribute financially?
How are you gonna contribute? Because the task at hand is to create a set of rules where your kid is being treated like a functioning, high-functioning adult. And this is what's going to help you cohabitate, which is also important to remember for the parent, that support does not equal control. And you don't want it to, because you want them to make those independent decisions about their job and their friends and all their things so that they are becoming that launched, functional adult.
Gotcha. So we were talking about this earlier, Jill, and I said to Nate that, you know, he asked me what would I want for my daughter when she is of the age to leave the house, which is after college, hopefully. And I said I would want her to be out of the house.
Sure.
And if it required a little bit of financial support, that would be okay. But I'm not paying for her to live in the West Village, like in a one-bedroom apartment, the way you see some young people living today. If I have a plan in place, a financial plan, Jill, I'm not incorporating that level of money for a kid to live.
I think there's a couple of things. I mean, first of all, just dovetailing on what Gale just said, I think it is important to have financial ground rules also. Hey, we're targeting you're going to move out by this date. Here's what you're going to contribute in rent, utilities. And here's what we think is necessary for you to get a little fund set aside so you can move out. We would be willing to contribute this much to help you get there. However, that might be predicated on some rules, like you do have to make these payments, you do have to do this. And I think that the boundaries have to be set. Now, look, I am asked all the time on the podcast, like, is it okay for me to take money from my parents? And I feel weird about it. I think if you have real conversations, it's great. And the parents have to do it in a way that they're not going to harm their own financial security.
I mean,
what's the worst thing is you help your kid out now, and then later in life, you're like, uh-oh, I need my kid to take care of me.
Yeah.
So conversations, boundaries, and trying to set hard dates that you can live by.
Real quick, Dr. Saltz, what are some of the mistakes that you see families make?
They don't talk about resentments when they start popping up instantly.
Ooh.
Talk about that right away, because what happens is people become passive aggressive. They start the silent treatment. They have explosions, and that erodes your relationship. The other mistake is they don't incorporate fun times. If you're living together, yeah, you need the rules. Yeah, you need to talk out problems early and often, but you need to have fun together to grow the relationship, to keep it and develop it into this really healthy adult-adult relationship where you're not only capable of cohabitating, but hey, your parents and kids, right? That's a lifelong relationship. So plan fun things together too.
Doc, you're good.
Good advice.
He's all right, right?
Yes. I need some individual therapy sessions with you.
We're going to have a family therapy session right here next time.
Jill, Dr. Gale Saltz, thank you very much. Such great advice. We appreciate it. Okay, up next, our friend Amanda Klutz is here. She in the green room. There she is. What's up, Amanda?
Hey, Amanda.
She is here to tell us about her new role on the new dating reality show. It's called Let's Marry Harry.
Can an infamous bachelor known for his whirlwind flings and messy breakups find true love? Well, that is the question at the heart of a new dating series called Let's Marry Harry. The Netflix show stars reality TV and social media personality Harry Jowsey, but dancer and podcast host Amanda Kloots is stepping in as Jowsey's protective best friend as he looks for a partner. 20 women compete for the ultimate prize, and that is his hand in marriage. Amanda Kloots is
awesome. My dating history is terrible, so my friends are here to help.
Looking good.
Hi, guys. Amanda is my North Star in all of this.
She's been there through all the tough times and the hard times with dealing with grief.
Love you.
I know no matter what, Amanda will have my back.
Well, yes.
Yes, she will.
Amanda Kloots is also the host of the new podcast, Good Grief, and she's here. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Good morning.
So, I knew about this Harry Jowsey guy. Uh-huh. I'm like, right? Like, first of all, I got questions about why he's the most eligible bachelor in America, because why? But also, yes. We know you. We love you.
Thank
How
you.
Are you his best friend?
Oh, my gosh. Well, he was on the Tyler Henry show that I hosted, and we became instant friends because that show led me to do his podcast. And after I did his podcast, he said to me, Amanda, I'm flying to New Zealand. My dad is dying, and I leave tonight. And I was like, oh my gosh, Harry. And so we just started connecting and talking every day. I had been through a severe loss and I was like, I'm here for you. Like, how can I help you go through this really tough thing that you're about to go do? I know what it's like to watch somebody die. And so we were voice noting every day back and forth from New Zealand to LA. And his father passed away. He came back to LA. We started hanging out, going on hikes, going to concerts, and we just became really great friends.
Yeah, so it was an old game. Friendship
it
in
was.
A lot of ways. You know, it's interesting because I know that I come to you a lot for dating advice. So she is a good friend.
Okay. Okay.
She's a very good
all
friend.
Right, all right.
As Harry's best friend, how did you help guide him through this process?
Well, you know, Harry is young and he has a reputation. Luckily,
What's that reputation, by the way?
Well, listen, I
apparently
never saw
all the
from the Himalaya.
Okay.
From the Himalaya modelizer, right?
Yeah.
But how? I mean,
but listen,
he's an average guy.
He went through this loss and it did change what he wanted in life. Mm. He, you know, as he saw his dad die and he was like, I wanted a wife with me. My dad will never meet my wife or children. And so, you know, I just told him, at this point in life, like, communication is key. Like, really just be open and honest with your partner, and you're gonna find that a relationship works so much better. Mm-hmm. So that was my major advice.
Now, the relationship that you guys have, of course, it is anchored in love and trust, but also some good advice from you.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about advice that you have received in your life. Some good dating advice and maybe some not so good dating advice.
Mm. Oh, gosh, you know, I would say now in my dating life, I think I used to go on dates always like hoping that I would measure up to the guy. And like I was auditioning for the guy.
Really?
And
Amanda, you're any man would be
total
blessed.
Package.
You're
right.
So
total
kind.
Package.
So are you.
I think a lot of women can relate to that. It's like we feel like we're auditioning. And I feel like now I very much feel different. I know who I am. I know what I want. I feel like I've really come to a different, you know, world in which, you know, no one's auditioning for each other.
Right.
Like, let's just really try to see if we connect and if we have the same goals in life and start from that, you know?
For people who don't know that you lost your husband, Nick
yes.
Cordero, during COVID. He had a 95-day battle with COVID.
Yes.
And that was 6 years ago.
Yes.
So now you have decided to start a new podcast
yes.
called Good Grief.
Yes.
Talking about the things that you've learned maneuvering through this process
yes.
in grief. I was listening to it last night and you were talking about the six things that grief taught you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so profound, Amanda, and so great. Tell us about why you decided to, maybe just give your message to the people who are suffering like you did.
You guys, I spend so much time connecting with other widows. I obviously feel a strong connection to them, and it's really a hard place to be in the beginning, a lot of darkness. They don't see a forward movement. They are really lost. They're very sad. And I know this, right? I know this pain. And so I try to offer them, you know, the resilience and the light that I've found, and to let them know that you'll get there one day, like just trust in the process. And after doing that over and over and spending a lot of time in therapy, I was like, you know what? It's time that we bring a podcast to life that focuses on finding the light through grief. It's an emotion we all go through, and it's really, really important to showcase that you can move forward.
You said in death that you've actually found a perfect relationship with Nick. That blew me away.
Yeah. You are a light, and now you're sharing with the rest of the world.
You.
We so appreciate
thank
you. Amanda Kloots, thank you very much. Let's Marry Harry is streaming now on Netflix. Good Grief with Amanda Kloots is available wherever you get your podcast. Talk of the Table, coming up next. Welcome back to CBS Mornings and a very special Talk of the Table. Today, we're talking about a group of scientists who say they've successfully used the gene editing technology called CRISPR to create hypoallergenic beagles. The twin allergen-free puppies are named Alfie and Bailey, and they were made by a biotech company called Kindred Companion Sciences. Joining us now is the company's CEO and geneticist, Matt Walker, and little Bailey the Beagle, who is now his pet. Good morning to you both.
Precious.
Hey, Bailey. Aw, there she is. Welcome, Matt. So let's talk about this. You have a severe dog allergy. Even the dogs that were supposedly hypoallergenic, you would have a reaction to. So what made you decide to test CRISPR on beagles?
Yeah, that's right. So when I left for college, my family got a dog, finally, a little golden doodle named Morgan. Whenever I went home, I had the same allergic reaction to Morgan as I did to any other dog. Mm. And as a scientist, I wondered why that would be the case. This was a breed that was supposedly created for its hypoallergenic properties. Mm-hmm. And I learned that it turns out that allergies are actually caused by a gene, a major allergen that's found across all dog breeds and produced from their tongue. It ends up in their saliva, and it's in their hair and dander. So I wondered if we could use this gene editing technology to precisely disrupt the main allergen gene and actually address allergies at their biological or genetic source.
So walk us through, in plain terms, if you can, what your team does when it comes to gene editing.
For sure. So on a high level, we start with dog skin cells, where we introduce CRISPR, which you can think of as basically tiny molecular scissors.
Okay.
And we direct those scissors to the main allergen gene, where it makes a small cut and disrupts that gene and prevents it from being produced. And then we take those edited skin cells and basically transfer them into an egg cell, which is carried by a surrogate, who then gives birth naturally to the animals carrying this genetic change.
Matt, you know, the dog lover in me thinks Bailey is adorable and that this is fantastic. Mm. The critical thinker in me says, could there be a slippery slope here, ethically? You know, and do you think there should be limits in using this technology for breeding pets? And where do you draw the line? Because some people think, well, okay, let's just breed, let's clone everything.
Let's edit everything.
Right, let's genetically edit everything.
Right, it's a really good and really important question. I think for me, the main considerations are, firstly, that animal health and welfare isn't affected. So far to date, our the two puppies have developed normally and they appear to be completely healthy. The second important consideration that I think about is just that we're not doing this for novelty or cosmetic reason. We're actually doing this because there's a real potential benefit to this genetic change. Allergies are a serious health issue. They contribute to asthma. They cause asthmatic attacks. So we're really trying to address a problem with this genetic change as opposed to creating some designer good, for instance.
That's ethical, but I don't know if everybody thinks like that.
Right.
Because once you open the door, then I'm not sure.
Right. It's a powerful tool, and you have to make sure that it's used carefully and responsibly.
Mm. But how do you prevent somebody from using it carefully and responsibly? I think at the end of the day, the question becomes, where do you draw the line when it comes to this kind of technology?
Yeah.
Editing and a living creature's genes is a serious thing.
Right, it is serious. And we need to make sure as a society and as regulators that we're using this tool in the most responsible way as possible. And that, like I said, just animal welfare and health and development is prioritized above all else.
Now, on the flip side, because of the benefits mm-hmm. and doing it responsibly, what does the future look like? It seems like, you know, there's some excitement for what's to come.
Yeah, we're really excited about applying our work to other breeds of dogs. I'm also really excited about applying this to service animals to help people who might be allergic and could really benefit from a guide dog, for instance.
Think about that.
But it's not available yet to pet owners.
It's not available yet. We're proceeding carefully down the regulatory path. Animals with genome edits are regulated by FDA, and so we're proceeding down that path before we can announce any sort of commercial availability date.
Bailey is getting down on that peanut butter. Bailey has
She's
not lifted her
time.
Head from that peanut
How you
butter
doing,
ball.
Girly? How you doing?
Yeah. And I like how you guys have matching wardrobe today.
Look at that.
Oh, she's
so
scared
cute.
Of the camera.
She is.
All right. Thank you so much, Matt Walker and Bailey. We appreciate you.
One of television's most acclaimed mystery comedies is back. DR from Detroit returns for a second season on Paramount Plus. Award-winning creator, writer, executive producer, and star, Tiara Kilpatrick, plays a school teacher whose amateur sleuthing pulls her into thrilling adventures. This season, she takes on her first case as a private investigator and quickly finds herself at the center of a murder mystery and treasure hunt, all while navigating a complicated love life. Tell me about it, girl.
I'm in break. Up limbo. I was this close, y'all. This close. I mean, we did almost kind of break up because, you know, there was this look.
Let me see the look.
Oh, hell no, they ain't broke up off that look. Well, I can't break up with a black man while he's in jail. Has hip-hop taught us nothing? Ja Rule said.
What did the Ja Rule said? Ja Rule said? Bro, it's called send an email.
You have to be free to be dumped. You know what, she's right. Breakups are all about timing. I've waited years for the right moment.
That's why I don't get into relationships. There's no easy way out. Like the woman.
Tiara Kilpatrick is with us now. We have been over here cackling.
We have been, yeah.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Oh, we are so glad you
good
are
to
here.
Have you.
Okay, so Diara's first PI job is finding a missing family's heirloom, right? So how did watching murder mysteries, we were talking about this in the back, I did it too with my grandmother.
Yes.
Murder, She Wrote, mm-hmm. Matlock, mm-hmm. all
Perry
of those.
Barnaby Jones.
Exactly.
Perry
all
Mason.
The things.
How did that inspire kind of your thinking with this?
Well, you know, I watched what my grandmother watched, and mm-hmm. I was pressed up against her watching those shows, and so I really wanted to make something that was Murder, She Wrote for millennials.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have talked about that. They're like, oh, this is Nancy Drew with more public school. Nancy Drew with the little Lowry's and hot sauce.
No,
on
no,
it.
Yes.
And so my character. Yes. What would
the
we
seasoning.
Do without Lowry's?
We'll
starve.
Have it.
Yeah. So my character, you know, discovered that she has a knack for private investigating after her Tinder date goes missing, and then she just kind of off to the races. And I think what's also fun about the show is that the biggest case for her to solve is always going to be her.
Yes.
And her personal life.
Yes.
So it's these two things. It's this case that she's always navigating and then her very complicated and messy love life.
You know, we introduced you as the creator, the writer, the executive producer, and the star of this series. And I know that for you, it must be incredibly fulfilling to be in this space and be the boss that you are. But can you talk to us about what it was like when you were coming up and you found yourself in spaces where you perhaps were the only one who looked like you?
Ooh, I was in spaces where I was the only one who looked like me a lot. And what it did was it empowered that little girl that had these dreams. Like you were asking me about the billboard earlier.
Yes.
You know, it was like, it just made me want to bring my little girl along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And so when I have those moments in LA, like when I see that.
You saw your billboard. What you're talking about is you saw your billboard.
Billboard in LA, it's like those moments where I have to say I am a very ambitious woman. There I am, shedding a little thug tear.
Right.
But I'm a very
good
ambitious
light,
woman.
By the way.
Thank you.
Skin just glowing. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, she looks
come
so
on
good.
Now, come through what? Chocolate.
Thank you. But yeah, sometimes you have to stop and pause and say, I am inside and answer prayer. It hasn't always been like this.
Right.
I haven't always been in a room where my point of view is reflected or put at the forefront. And so I just like to stop and breathe and thank myself for always being obedient to my dreams in
that's
those
right.
moments.
Living what I prayed for.
Yes.
That's
what
for
up,
sure.
though? Go Lions, yeah. by the way.
Shout out to the Lions. What up, though, Detroit?
What up,
y'all
though?
Know I love Detroit.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you. By the way, I need to be in season 3. I'm going to just throw that out there. I'll just wait for the commercial break.
Well,
but I'm just saying.
You know, I had a great conversation with Chris Webber about being in the
shout
show, too.
To
so
Webber.
We have to do something like a sports. Jalen Rose, Chris,
oh,
like,
I would
we have
love
to do like
that.
A sports bra.
Come
sports
on,
bra.
Make it happen.
I would love
make
to tell
happen.
The people at
yeah.
Paramount.
It's Paramount. This is
Paramount
family.
Yes.
But speaking of, you know, guests on the show,
yes.
One of my close friends is on the show, and people describe him as
that?
90s fine.
Wait, who?
Method Man.
Method Man.
Wait. Is Clifford
well, that's my guy. That's my guy. You know, we cool. You know,
he's
that's my dog.
You know
good
what?
People.
He's 90s fine. He's also 2000s fine.
I was going to say, what is
forever fine?
What is 90s fine?
My
whole life.
90s fine is like Method Man, Morris Chestnut, you
oh,
know.
Okay.
Tay Diggs.
I see. Okay.
Right. That old school fine. Yeah,
yeah.
It's
old
so
school.
Nice to see him in this role. Method's like in his rom-com era, which I love. A lot of people know him, obviously, from Wu-Tang, Mr. Cash Rules, Everything Around Me. But he's playing a lover in this show, you know? He's playing a guy whose biological clock is ticking.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because we always put that on women.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the woman whose biological clock is ticking. But
right.
sometimes the fellas want to think about legacy and what the love and everything mm-hmm. that they're leaving behind as well. So
yeah.
we have great chemistry. We have a great time.
Yeah.
And he's a fantastic actor.
Yes, he
yeah.
is.
He is.
Actor.
Yeah.
So
I love
him and Mary J. taught us about Thug Love.
You're
they
right.
did.
Yes.
They really did.
Come and on. All I need
and
to
that's
get
the
by.
Thing. We sing on our set a lot, and he's the only one that busts out rapping.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
yeah, cool. it's really cool.
One of the things that I hope we have enough time. You went undercover on the show.
I did.
As a man. This is
I
a spoiler
did.
Alert, folks.
Mm-hmm.
But the cast did not know. Can you just describe that moment for us? This
well,
is you.
Oh, when
this
I walked
you.
Into this
that's
room.
Her.
When I walked into this room in drag, and it was really, I realized that's the only time I had been in a room with all men, and I was undercover, and they were slowly realizing that I was a woman. It was really interesting.
It's giving John David Washington.
It is totally giving John David Washington.
Can I just tell you?
Yo,
there
man.
It is.
What? Oh,
listen,
my God.
I had to call my dad. I said, once they put the beard and everything on me, I said, Daddy, tell me the truth. Is Denzel my daddy? Like, let's unearth the family secrets. I
Deion
really
Kilpatrick, thank you so
him.
Much.
Oh
Deion from Detroit, make sure you check
I
it out on Paramount Plus.
You're killing me.
I cannot.
And we do thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow in your feed and Monday through Friday on your local CBS stations starting at 7 a.m.
Paramount Podcasts.